Shepherd snapped. Heavens, man! I only wish to look through the pages. You will deny me that? And Devlin was obliged to surrender it. Shepherd, thanking him, took the book back to his private residence and closed the door. Devlin's sermon on rote prayer was perversely applicable to the ensuing half-hour, for it was with a ritual circularity that his attention kept straying to the jailer's study, where the man would be seated behind his desk, turning the thin pages of the book in his great white hands. Devlin did not guess that Shepherd might have known about the deed that he had concealed between the testaments, for his nature was not a suspicious one, and he did not take pleasure, as some men did, in believing himself to have been betrayed. He hoped, as the minutes dragged by, that Shepherd would restrict his reading to the more ancient parts of the text. He hoped that the book would be returned to him with the charred deed undiscovered and untouched. Devlin knew very well that Shepherd's faith was of a staunchly Levitican variety. It was not unreasonable to hope that he might confine his browsing to the Pentateuch, or to Chronicles and Kings. He was hardly likely to favour the minor prophets, but the Gospels were standard fare, most especially for a Sunday. He was very likely to turn there, whatever his persuasion, and in that case he would almost certainly come across the hidden page. Finally, the afternoon's discussion came to an end, and Devlin, in a posture of some dread, took his leave of the felons in his spiritual charge. The duty sergeant nodded goodbye, stifling a yawn. Devlin let himself out. A hush fell over the jailhouse. He crossed the courtyard, mounted the steps to the porch of the jailer's cottage, and knocked upon the door. From within, Shepherd's deep voice bid him to enter. Devlin did so, and crossed the calico hallway to the jailer's study. The door was open. Devlin saw at once that his Bible lay open on the jailer's desk, with the charred slip of paper on top of it, in full view. On this, the 11th day of October 1865, a sum of £2,000 is to be given to Miss Anna Wetherill, formerly of New South Wales, by Mr. Emery Staines, formerly of New South Wales, as witnessed by Mr. Crosby Wells, presiding. Shepherd folded his hands and waited for his guest to speak. "Something I found," Devlin said, "but it's no use to anyone."
"No use to anyone?"
Shepherd queried pleasantly.
"Why on earth do you say that?"
"It's invalid," Devlin said. "The principal hasn't signed, therefore it's not legal."
Cowell Devlin, like all men who will not admit fault to themselves, was loath to admit fault to any other man. He became very arch and condescending whenever he was accused of doing ill.
"No, indeed," said Shepherd. "It's not legal."
"It's not binding, that's what I meant," Devlin said, with a slight frown. "It's not binding in the legal sense."
Shepherd did not blink.
"Which is rather a shame, wouldn't you say?"
"Why is that?"
"If only Emery Staines had signed it, why, half of the fortune discovered at Crosby Wells Cottage would belong to Anna Wetherill. That would be a turn of events, would it not?"
"But the fortune in the hermit's cottage never belonged to Emery Staines."
"No," Shepherd said. "Forgive me. You seem to be rather more certain of that fact than I am."
Hal Devlin knew very well that the gold in Crosby Wells' cottage had originated from 4 gowns, sewn up by Lydia Wells, purchased by Anna Wetherill. He knew that the gold had been siphoned and then retorted by the goldsmith Arquie, only to be stolen by Staines and concealed in Wells' cottage at some point thereafter. He could not say any of this to Shepherd, however. Instead, he said,
"There is no reason to think that the fortune belonged to Mr. Staines."
"Beyond the fact that Mr. Staines vanished upon the day of Mr. Wells' death, and Mr. Wells was not, to popular understanding, a man of means."
Shepherd stabbed the deed with his index finger.
"This certainly seems pertinent, Reverend, to our case at hand. This document appears to indicate that the fortune originated with Staines, and that Staines meant to give half of it, exactly half, to a common prostitute. I would hazard to guess that Crosby Wells, as his witness, was keeping the fortune for him when he died.
This was a reasonable hypothesis. Perhaps Shepherd was right upon the latter point, Devlin thought, though of course he was mistaken upon the former. Aloud, he said,
"You are right that it seems pertinent. However, as I've told you already, the contract is not valid. Mr. Staines has not signed his name."
"I presume that you found this deed in Crosby Wells' cottage the day you went to collect his remains."
"That is correct," Devlin said.
"If you have kept such careful custody of it," Shepherd said, "then I dare say it occurred to you how very valuable this deed might be to certain persons. To Anna Wetherill, for instance. By this paper's authority, she could become the richest woman this side of the Southern Alps."
"She could not," Devlin said. "The deed is unsigned."
"If it were to be signed," Shepherd said.
"Amory Staines is dead," Devlin said.
"Is he?" Shepherd said. "Dear me, another certainty that we do not share."
But Carol Devlin was not easily intimidated.
"The promise of great riches is a dangerous thing," he said, folding his hands across his navel in the clerical way. "It is a temptation like no other, for it is the temptation of great influence and great opportunity, and these are things we all desire. If Miss Wetherill were to be told about this deed, her hopes would be falsely raised. She would start dreaming of great influence and great opportunity. She would no longer be contented with the life she led before. This was a circumstance I feared. I therefore resolved to keep the information to myself, at least until Amory Staines was either recovered or found to be dead. If he is found dead, I will destroy the deed. But if he lives, I shall go to him and show him the paper, and ask him whether he wishes to sign it. The choice would be his own."
"And what if Staines is never found?" the jailer said. "What then?"
"I made my decision with compassion, Mr. Shepherd," Devlin said firmly. "I feared very much what would happen to poor Miss Wetherill should that deed of gift be made public, or should it fall into the wrong hands. If Mr. Staines is never found, then no hopes will be dashed, and no blood spilled, and no faith lost. I judge that to be no small mercy.